It is Wednesday, my dudes, and that means it is time for another episode of Codex Radio. I'm your host, as always, Endless Odyssey, and today we have episode 20. Who would have thought that we would make it 20 episodes into the show? I certainly didn't, but we made it, and today we have part 8 of our reading of Planescape Torment. It has occurred to me that maybe I should get back into the habit of doing a brief recap of the previous episode before we jumped into the readings to refresh your memory and mine. So last week, we met Dakon in the Smoldering Corpse Bar, and he joined our team. He claimed to be a Githzerai. He has a cool Zerth blade that's made out of some kind of weird pseudo-matter that changes forms depending on how he's feeling, which is kind of cool. And Mort got an upgrade. We helped Ingress get back home, and in exchange, for some reason, we got her teeth, which leapt into Mort's mouth, ripped out his old teeth, and implanted themselves in their place. But they seem to have the weird side effect of being able to change shapes, so I guess Mort's potency in combat has been improved. Hopefully that has succeeded in jogging your noggin. And with that, we are now ready to enter today's reading. So, without further ado, I give you part 8 of Planescape Torment. Chapter 24. The cool, dry air was ominous in the tattoo parlor. Beneath the sweetness of the incense smoke, the musty smell of old leather had been intertwined with the slightest sour hint of meat gone bad. All about the shop, intricate designs had been inked on sheets of leather and parchment. They lay about haphazardly, but by the lack of dust there, it seemed to be an odd order to it all. It was as if Fel worked in a meticulous but fickle hand. A dabbis stood in the center of the room, but something about it struck me as odd. It had the same shock of white hair, the same greenish cast to its skin, the same pair of goat horns, and then suddenly I realized this one was walking on the ground, not floating. For some reason, that made me uneasy. I blinked, looking to Mort. Mort, you said dabbis float, right? This one's walking on the ground. Mort glanced at the dabbis, and his eyes widened. Aha! I knew you goatheads could walk! I knew it! Mort gleefully turned back to me. Ha! This one must not be aloof enough to get off the ground! I greeted him. The dabbis waited patiently, its hands tucked into its sleeves. I asked the dabbis several questions, trying to refresh my memory of the rebuses that appeared above its head. As I was about to ask the dabbis as to who he was, I suddenly realized I already knew the creature's name, Fel. It wasn't the sign or the obvious fact that he was acting as a shopkeeper. There was something deeper in his name than I realized. It echoed in my skull. As if in response, the dabbis inclined his head slightly, and a lone symbol appeared above its head. It was blurry at first, then resolved into a white oval with a black lightning bolt through it. I feel like I know you, Fel, I said, slightly disoriented. Fel bowed reverently, and a stream of symbols swirled about his head, rotating clockwise, then counterclockwise. It took me a moment to translate. This is the first time, and not the first time, you have come to this place. Do you know who I am? Another series of symbols materialized into focus above Fel's head. The translation came to me just as quickly and sharply as the symbols themselves, as if I had translated the exact same string many times before. Yes, but I am not permitted to tell your story. I bit my lip. Why not? For a moment, there was no response from Fel. Then a stream of rebuses appeared, as if trickling out of Fel's mind. My apologies, I cannot. I cannot change the nature of a man. I couldn't explain why, but the last sentence sent a crawling sensation through my skull. The words rattled in my brain, biting deep into my mind like an itch just out of reach. There was something hidden and profound in that sentence that I desperately needed to remember. I clawed at the musty spot in the dim fold of my consciousness. It was a flicker in the corner of my eye, gone when I turned to face it. Change the nature of a man. I twitched. Nature of a man? What does that mean? The symbols that appeared above fell almost mirrored the previous stream. My apologies. I cannot say. I grumbled and turned around in a circle, displaying the maps of scars and scratches as well as the tapestry of ink on my flesh. Can you tell me anything about these tattoos on my body? Fell studied my body for a moment, walking around me. The soft patter of his heels against the squeaky floorboards made me shudder. There was something wrong about him. Above his head, Fell mirrored each symbol as he examined it, then returned to face me. I know them. None are by my hand. Can you tell me about some of them? Fell nodded, symbols appearing around him like fireflies. The ones upon your back were scribed with a careful hand and are directions for a mind that forgets itself. The symbol that lies upon your left shoulder is the mark of torment. I fought the tremble that wanted to shudder through me as I looked down at my arm. The word was like a set of iron claws scraping against polished shale. The wound deep in me throbbed with the word. Torment. The symbol sharpened, gaining edges that were almost painful to my eyes. It is torment. It is that which draws all tormented souls to you. Fell nodded at my left arm, at my shoulder. The flesh knows it suffers even when the mind has forgotten, and so you wear the rune always. I scratched my shoulder idly. It had suddenly felt very itchy, the mark unwelcome. You say you've met me before, Fell. Do you know how I died? For a moment, Fell did not respond. Then, slowly, menacingly, three symbols materialized above his head, each of them casting a long shadow. Shadows. Shadows? The three symbols swirled around each other, each leaving a faintly black, misty trail about them. They took on a ragged edge, like teeth and talons, and multiplied. Where there were three, there became nine. Nine became 27, until the room was a swarm of shadows. Many shadows. They streamed from the darkness, swarmed you, then left you to die. Dakon touched the hilt of his blade while Mort's teeth chittered. Chief? Maybe we should leave. I faced Fell. Why? Why did they kill me? The shadowed symbols swirled into one, then dissolved to be replaced with a simple symbol. I do not know. After regaining our nerves, we browsed the store, eyeing scraps of flesh carefully etched with black patterns and symbols. Looking at them with the eye of a mage, I noticed they thrummed with power, a resonance to them that distinguished the symbols from your everyday tattoo. One was the mark of a warrior, granting greater strength. Another was a symbol that granted insight. Yet others told tales as bards would, gathered about a fire. As I explored the store, Fell patiently sorted his parchments, setting them here and there knowingly, even if there was no apparent pattern to his actions. Curious with the enigmatic creature, I took the opportunity to brush past the curtain into the back room. I wish I hadn't. Long frames, stretched out and laid against the walls, adorned the room, with human skin stretched across like leather being tanned. Scrawled across the torn and distended flesh were tattoos, artful designs that seemed to tell a dozen stories of triumph and tragedy, pain and delight. I wasn't quite sure I wanted to know how Fell had collected these. He stood calmly, watching me as I stumbled back into the main room. I coughed, embarrassed. What are those frames in the back room, Fell? A caravan of symbols slowly materialized around Fell, one by one. It is my gallery. Your discarded skins are my canvas. I admire you. I am saddened for you. I shuddered at the thought of all those pelts. Were they mine, or was Fell exaggerating? I didn't want to know. Saddened for me? Why? Another train of symbols formed around Fell, this time forming a circle. The mark of torment lies upon your flesh. Tragedies and loss have built themselves upon it, like stones upon a foundation. You have endured great pain. What do you mean? A long stream of rebuses appeared around Fell's head, then surrounded his arms like manacles. I admire you because you have never surrendered to the weight of these losses, despite the fact their chains hang on to you still. A string of rebuses coalesced yet again, then drifted down, covering the Dabas like a cloak. These losses blanket this life and all of your past ones. You shed lives like a molting serpent. You are exploring the infinite paths of life. More rebuses appeared, then fell suddenly to the floor, streaming out behind him like a shadow. Take with you this warning. Each of your lives cast a shadow on existence. You must travel to a place where these shadows have gone mad and regrets have scarred the earth. A sudden rush of memory came over me. You shall come to a prison built of regrets and sorrow, where the shadows themselves have gone mad. There you will be asked to make a terrible sacrifice, my love. For the matter to be laid to rest, you must destroy that which keeps you alive and be immortal no longer. Dianara's words echoed as if they were freshly spoken from her ethereal lips. I swayed, suddenly unnerved. Is there anything else you can tell me? A brief series of paper-thin rebuses appeared in an orderly row next to Fel, then vanished into glowing motes. Do not sign anything. I nodded. Very well. Another series of rebuses appeared, forming a spiral. They had the texture of a question about them. Do you feel complete? I closed my eyes, searching deep inside of me, caressing that scar that had been cut deeper than any of the marks that tickled my flesh. I don't. In fact, ever since I woke up in the mortuary, I feel like something's missing. Something inside. Fel nodded, and a series of symbols materialized in a halo around him. You are strong. Keep faith, and you shall become whole again. We poked about his wares a little longer, purchased a few that looked useful, and eagerly left. Chief, I'd say this with all the sincerity I can muster, but we really, really should leave the goat-faced Burke alone. He looked over the fresh tattoos on our arms. I've never been happier over the fact that I don't have skin. Dakon shook his head as we walked. This Fel knows you in ways you do not. He would be a most useful ally. His knowing will complete yours. I looked back over my shoulder. I have to agree with Dakon on this one, Mort. Fel knows something about my past. It's something I need. Maybe if I talk to him, I might remember something. Mort shook his head, muttering. There was almost no humor in his voice. There's a reason the guy has to open up shop in this dingy corner of the hive, Chief. There's a reason he doesn't float like those other piking hornheads do. Part of me was surprised we hadn't been accosted by thugs yet again by the time we made it to the arch that Naroki had told us about. I took a deep breath, drew a circle around my heart as he instructed, and with a whoosh, the space in front of us warped, twisted in on itself in a spiral of blue with motes of silver dust. A cold breeze blew from the portal. The other side was dim as a tomb. I stepped through cautiously, even as Mort and Dakon comfortably went in. After hearing Ingress's story, I was wary of such doors in space where shades and fire, frost and teeth could meet me on the other side. The portal snapped shut behind me. The air inside was stale, the dusty scent of age ripe in the air. Where there should have been an eerie, uncomfortable silence, in the distance there was a rhythmic yet irregular creaking, as if creatures were wandering through this mausoleum with mindless purpose. Ignoring my own heavy breaths and the heavy beating of my heart in my ears, in the darkness I could hear rattles of bone and the shuffles and scrapes of things dragging against metal. The dead were walking. Before we could take another step, a spectral figure materialized from the gloom of the passageway ahead and quickly moved to block our path. It floated before us, its once human features twisted in a mask of rage. Defilers! Leave this place at once! I quelled my shock and, after a moment, extended a polite hand. Greetings. Leave now! Its booming voice echoed down the halls. This place is forbidden to the living. Leave while you still can! I looked beyond him into the passage ahead. I have some questions first. Its pale face twisted into a snarl. Seek your answers elsewhere. This place is a sanctuary for the dead. I shall not permit their slumber to be disturbed by the intrusion of yet another insolent mortal. Another? This must have been the source of the disturbed dead. Has someone else been here? The spirit grumbled. If you must know, yes. There is another intruder who, even now, continues to violate the sanctity of these hallowed halls. The anger in the spirit's voice faded. He seemed somewhat saddened by the admission. The souls of my brothers and sisters cry out for peace. Who is this other intruder? He is an evil coward who wields great power over the dead. He seeks something within these halls. What it might be, or what his purpose is in seeking it, I cannot say. I looked the ghost up and down. He was some sort of guardian, after all. Why don't you drive this intruder away? The specter shook his head. I cannot. The coward has sealed himself within the inner chamber of the mausoleum. He has erected powerful wards that bar my entrance into the chamber. It is from there that he calls upon his dark arts to awaken my brethren and bends them to his evil will. I smirked. Sounds to me like you need the help of one intruder to get rid of another. The spirit remained silent for several long moments. I could almost feel the weight of his lifeless gaze upon me. Yes, you might prevail where I have failed. If you pledge to rid me of this black guard, I shall grant you passage. What say you?
I nodded. I'll do it.
So be it.
The spirit slowly began to fade until only the echoing of its disembodied voice remained.
But take heed. Tread lightly in these halls, lest you join the others in eternal rest.
The floors and walls of the mausoleum were plated with metal, laid out as if they replaced wooden boards. Subconsciously, I stepped firmly on each broad slab, avoiding the cracks that separated one plate from the other. Now and again, I felt them shift. They clattered hollowly beneath our boots when it came to me. These plates were the covers of metal lockers that held the bodies of the dead. We were walking on their graves. There was a click, and the panel I stepped on sank half an inch into the floor. Oh, hells. I looked up to see a bright flash of light darting out from the shadows, a scintillating orb of color that spiraled toward me with a whine. It gave off flecks of light as it flew. Bolts of pain lanced through my body when it struck me, electric sparks that set nerves through my belly afire as the chromatic orb's arcane energies were released into my flesh. I cried out in shock as Morton Dacon paused. When I started breathing again, the halls were eerily silent. And then the rattling ahead resumed, steadier than before, as if those bones now creaked with purpose. The wandering dead were clumsy, but possessed a ferocity and stamina that no living creature could match. They creaked and rattled as they fought, my dagger nearly useless against their meatless bones. Mort cracked against their bones with his own skull, while Dacon's Zerth blade clashed against the dry skeletons. I grappled when I could, twisted and broke spines. A twist of my wrist snapped the leg bone from a fallen skeleton, and swinging it as a club, I helped bring a second death to another. Blade clashed against bone as we proceeded down the dimly lit passages, scattering ivory shards that clattered on metal. One by one, the undead fell, lifeless once again. I took the front line, soaking the damage like a sponge as their clubs and rusted axes fell as Mort and Dacon hacked away. The things were weak, their strikes like drops of water against stone, but still the rain of their clumsy blows wore me down. Around one corner, though, the clanking of metal heralded a whole new danger. A giant skeleton lumbered towards us in heavy armor, rusted and yellow with age. The enormous blade it wielded could have come up to my neck if he set it on its tip. The bones had been warped and lengthened by the necromancer's foul magic, grown to an immense size so that it towered over all of us. Immediately I thrust my hand outward, crying out the words of power that triggered the spell I had prepared. An orb of flashing eldritch light, begemmed with all the hues of the rainbow, darted from my fingertips and struck the skeleton. It punched through the armor, searing the creature to its ribs as Dacon leapt into the fray and Mort swung around and attacked him from behind. We strode down those halls for hours, bringing final rest to the walking dead. Dacon's own sorcery clashed against the undead. With chants in an arcane and alien tongue, he unleashed bolts of fury that shattered whatever they struck, so that the rains of bone shards had become a familiar pattern. Careless footsteps triggered the magical wards that protected the mausoleum. Now and again I had to rest and wait as the wounds knit back together, laying fresh scars over the old. Dakon was a quiet companion for the most part, but some small talk loosened his tongue while we rested.
"My past is not known to you. It is not my will that you should know it," he had said. "Know that I bear the scars of one who has traveled the plains. Know that I have never rested long in any one place. Know that I bear the weight of one who has traveled far to be in this place. Know that I am a Githzerai. Know that I am of the people of Xerthamon. It was Xerthamon who knew the Githzerai before we knew ourselves. He knew what had to be done to free us. From his knowing came action. From his knowing, freedom was born. The Githzerai ceased to be slaves and became a people. Know that I follow the unbroken circle of Xerthamon. His words are known to me. His heart is known to me. All that remains is that I know myself."
What a sociable guy. By the time we reached the gates to the heart of the mausoleum, we had downed a good portion of our precious clot charms, the crystallized blood dissolving on our tongues sent chills through us as the magic did its work, stemming the flow of blood in our many wounds and renewing our battered bodies. In the center of the chamber was a mid-sized man in long robes of deep black. His hair was neatly coiffed, and an impeccably trimmed goatee complemented his handsome features. Noticing my arrival, he put down the book he was writing in and strode confidently over to face us, smiling.
"Impressive. I must admit, I never thought you would make it this far."
I unsheathed my dagger. At least now there was something I could stab. "I'm glad to have disappointed you. Are you the one responsible for all the walking dead?" He chuckled and waved a hand dismissively.
"Who I am is of no consequence to you. What I want is the question that should concern you most."
As he spoke, he looked me up and down as if somehow fascinated.
"Very well. What do you want?"
He took a step back and cocked an eyebrow.
"I want your blood."
I stared for a moment before speaking again.
"Is that some kind of threat?"
The man started to answer, but stopped himself abruptly. An evil smile spread across his face, and he began to laugh.
"Yes, I suppose it is."
He continued to laugh even harder at his own private joke. His hands had begun to move at his sides. Slowly, they flitted back and forth, tracing intricate patterns in the air. Another time, I would have been mesmerized by the complexities of the spell he wove, wondering if I could have learned them myself. But instinct spurred me on, and with a flick of my fingers and a cry, a chromatic orb bloomed from my fingertips and struck the necromancer in the chest. He stumbled backwards in shock as the skeletons surrounding the room closed in.
"A mageling?"
he said, awed, and his hands began to move in greater desperation, not expecting this twist.
"Sorry, Mort," I cried, and with that I grabbed him and tossed him past the chattering skeletons.
He cursed as he flew, cracking against the necromancer's nose as Dakon and I took care of the skeletons with brutish force. While my body took the blows from the skeletons, Dakon sliced apart one skeleton after another. I threw one bolt of energy after another at the wizard as Mort buzzed about, nipping and tearing at his black robe, drawing blood with Ingress's fierce, chittering teeth. One final chromatic orb blew through the wizard's chest just as my magic was running thin and he collapsed with a croak. The magics that held the skeletons together surrounding us faded. Bones clattered and rags fluttered as they fell, sending up clouds of ancient dust. Easier than I expected. I rifled through the man's body, trying to find some evidence of who he was and what he was doing here. A few trinkets he carried looked useful, brimming with magic, but the musty tome he was writing in chilled my blood. It appeared to be a diary of some sort, cracked and worn with age. Some sort of crest had been burned into the cover. I could make out a series of interlocking triangles centered around the initials SR. The writing upon its pages had faded considerably, but the last few entries seemed to have been penned recently.
Day 2 of the 127th year of Factol Hashgar's reign.
At last I have found it! The missing page of the Aptari Grimoire is now in my possession. As I had guessed, the page detailed the necessary components for the casting of the final transformation spell. I have all but one of the components. A drop of an immortal's blood is all that stands between me and the eternal power of lichdom. but where can I find such a rarity? Perhaps I should seek the answer through divination.
Day 14 of the 127th year of Factal Hashkar's reign.
After days of taxing divination spells, I finally have my answers. The divination revealed the location of an immortal to be somewhere within an ancient mausoleum located in the Hive section of Sigil. I must make haste. I must find this creature and draw its blood before it moves on.
Day 15 of the 127th year of Factal Hashkar's reign.
I have arrived at the mausoleum. Immediately I was set upon by a shade that guards the remains of those interred within this place. I managed to elude the spirit and found my way into what appears to have been some sort of inner sanctum, protected by some minor wards to prevent any further interruptions by that supernatural twit. I have set about raising some of the locals to conduct a search for the immortal. If the divination was accurate and the immortal is here, then likely it is interred within one of the many crypts that line these halls. It is only a matter of time now.
Day 17 of the 127th year of Factal Hashkar's reign.
I am not alone. Someone has entered the mausoleum and is interfering with my servants. Could this be the one I seek? The divination revealed only that I would find the immortal here. Could it be that my presence in this place has prompted that which I seek to seek me out? What a delightful twist. I shall have to...
The ink of this last entry is still wet. I would have to be more careful. As we stepped into the corridor, the guardian spirit materialized before us. Its ghostly countenance regarded us benevolently.
I thank you. You have done me a great service. The spirits of my charges sleep quietly once again. Go in peace, friend.
The apparition faded away, leaving us alone in the deserted halls of the mausoleum. All in a day's work, I said, smiling. Chapter 25. When I next saw Naroki, he was pulling at one of his spikes of hair and using it to scratch a spot on his face. I couldn't help but think he'd look a lot better with dreadlocks. I tossed the necromancer's journal down on the table. I found out what was going on in the mausoleum. The dead sleep again. He flipped through it, scanning the more recent pages momentarily. Naroki's lines of worry smoothed out.
Thanks, Givai.
He reached into his robes and drew forth a small bag, which he handed to me.
Copper coin. 200.
I nodded and turned to leave when I spied a young dustman hidden in the corner of the bar. There was a bleak expression on his face, something deeper than the grim, mournful gaze that dustmen wore constantly. The boy seemed on the brink of breaking under the weight of his despair, with a stubble on his chin and dark circles beneath his eyes. He was staring at the wall with a somber expression. I walked up to him. Greetings. The dustman didn't look up. He stared straight ahead as if he was seeing something several leagues beyond the walls of the bar.
Are you all right?
The dustman didn't respond. He kept staring into the distance.
Alrighty then, Mort hissed. Let's go, Chief. This dusty might as well be fertilizer.
I sighed. Fair enough. Let's get out of here. As I turned to leave, the dustman suddenly spoke. His voice barely a murmur. I had to strain to hear the words. I thought he said something about wanting to die.
What did you say?
The boy's expression did not flicker.
Do you want to die?
I mulled it over for a moment. No. Do you?
Yes.
He studied me.
Why do you want to live?
There are certain questions I need answered about my life before I'm willing to surrender it. I want to find out who I am. The dustman listened silently. After I spoke, he didn't respond, merely watching me. He looked like he was thinking. I took a chair next to him. Do you want to die? Is that why you asked? His gaze slowly slid over to meet mine.
Yes.
Why do you want to die?
This existence is a mockery of life. I do not wish to continue the charade any longer.
His face wrinkled in disgust.
Why would anyone wish to remain in this foul city, in the center of a multiverse that feeds on pain and hatred? Death is silent, comforting.
Apparently, he'd never tried Garbar root.
Then why haven't you killed yourself already? I have been looking for a means to end my life. Will you kill me?
My eyebrows furrowed. No. If you lack the conviction to kill yourself, I'm not going to do it for you.
It is not a matter of conviction.
In the distance, I noticed Dakon had ordered a cup of that horrid, tepid tea. He sipped it thoughtfully. Then it must be another matter. So I ask you, what is it about living that drives you to hate it? Surely living cannot be as bad as you make it out to be.
This is living?
The dustman bared his teeth and his hands clenched.
This existence. This existence is a mockery of life. I do not wish to continue the charade any longer. Death is comforting.
Yeah, maybe after the first death, I grumbled, but immediately wished I could take it back. The dustman blinked, then sneered.
The first death? What, were you resurrected?
Resurrected?
Brought back to life. The magic required is indeed powerful.
My hand twitched. I knew I had the weight of countless deaths pressed upon me, so many that I knew the border between life and death well. I knew how I could cull the slightest spark back into a cold body. I gulped. Who would be capable of such a power?
A powerful sorcerer or priest, or one of the powers, but not anyone I know.
He frowned and waved a hand dismissively.
And I don't believe you know anyone of that sort either.
I scowled. If this whelp was going to waste his life like this... You don't believe I can die? Try and kill me then. See what happens. He looked at me skeptically.
Nay, I think not. Even if I felt the urge to do so.
I stood up stiffly. Then I shall force you to watch me. I'll show you what death holds. I placed my hands around my head.
What do you mean?
He looks like he wants to turn away, but he cannot.
You can't, seriously.
I barely felt the snap as I broke my own neck. Quick. Painless. I was glad so many I sent to the Black Embrace had so easy a trip. My vision slowly returned. My death felt different this time. As the dull colors of the bar swam in my eyes, I noticed the boy standing above me. He looked horrified and fascinated. He had propped me into the chair and was looking apprehensively at the other bar patrons. They didn't appear to have noticed or had mistaken me for a drunk. Ugh. Convinced now? I groaned. Man, that left a real crick in my neck.
He swallowed hard. Are you one of the Walking Dead?
No, I rumbled, still dizzy.
Then what are you?
I shook my head. I don't know. But I die and am reborn.
Yet, you still think? You still feel?
My breath rattled in my throat as I pressed a hand against my chest. Yes, but there is a hollowness. Something is missing, and it eats at you, never leaves you at peace. Speaking of it sent chills down my spine.
To be dead, and still think and feel? Will misery never leave a body be?
The thought seemed to horrify him.
Even death is no release.
I nodded, then twisted my head back and forth. With a satisfying pop, that annoying pressure in my vertebrae was gone. Indeed, perhaps you should not be so quick to abandon this life before knowing what the next life holds for you. The boy stared at me.
You were speaking truthfully.
He looked at me in amazement.
What is there? What did you see on the other side?
I shivered to think about it. I will not speak of that place to anyone. I have said too much already. He grew more insistent.
You must tell me. I must know.
I stood up, pushing the chair aside. I will tell you nothing.
You must tell me.
He clenched his fist.
What would you ask of me?
I would ask you to live.
You mock me, sir. Make a fool of my questions.
His eyes grew watery, and bitter tears trickled down his worn face. You are the fool who wants to throw away your life so carelessly. It insults the dead, and it insults the living. Dakon was staring now. Perhaps he saw me kill myself for the first time. Oh well, he'd had to learn sooner or later. Mort seemed worried.
Speak what you saw. What is the true death? What did you see there?
His voice grew louder and more insistent, so much so that the surrounding dustmen turned their head. Perhaps there was no ward of silence after all, or perhaps it was just limited. I ignored their piercing stares. Very well. Reaching into the depths of my memory, I culled the vision of the lands of the dead back into being, the nothing place that lay between this world and the next. It was like remembering a half-forgotten dream, perhaps, faded, obscured. But once I gripped the smallest detail, the rest burst forth in its full horror like the rolling tides. I lay on an island, adrift upon an ocean of great darkness. The island was formed of shadowed stones, but the stones were not stones, for they murmured and whispered to me in a speech I could not understand. There was no silence there, no comfort, and the chill burrows beneath the flesh and sinks into the bone.
There is no difference.
He looked down at the floor and chewed his lips with a strange expression.
Beyond the shadow of this existence, more misery awaits. There is no oblivion, no cleansing. Nothing changes. The planes rotate, and nothing ever changes.
Except you. You can still change. He scoffed.
Nay, I have tried, repeatedly.
If you believe that, then it will be true.
It is more than belief, it is reality.
His gaze turned dark.
Have you seen this city? It rots, and everything within it rots. There is no hope, nothing to strive for. Everything is stained with darkness and shadow.
I looked around the bar, watching as everyone else sipped their tea or meditated peacefully. What about your beliefs as a dustman? Isn't that a worthy enough goal? He nodded.
The dustman philosophy is a worthy goal, else I would not have become a dustman.
Then why not make the beliefs of the dustman your focus? Perhaps this is a life of pain and misery, but if you focus on your beliefs, and that which is of value to you, they shall help you work past it.
Perhaps.
He considered what I had said.
Perhaps you are right, but sometimes it is hard to ignore the pain of this life. How should I deal with it?
Simply try to live as best you can. Use this life, no matter how painful, as an opportunity. You're young. Perhaps seeing more of this life will kill your eagerness for death. The boy fell silent, thinking. Eventually he turned back up to me.
Your words carry weight, sir, and a fresh perspective. I will do as you have said.
I nodded. That is all I ask. Live, grow old, and learn. Farewell. With money, spells, and a little more wisdom in the world, I was ready to continue seeking out Farid. First, though, I had to visit a friend. Mourns for Trees smiled widely upon seeing me.
Ah, my friend, you've returned. Something you wished of me?
No, I wanted to ask Dakon here to help you, I replied.
One finds your request most intriguing, Dakon mused. Trees in the hive? Like cities in limbo, they would stand as a testament to the will of the people not to bow to that which would surround and devour them, to take what has been thrust upon them or left behind and make good of it. I too will care for these trees.
Gleefully, Mourns for Trees put his fingers to his lips to hide his smile.
Look, oh look!
He pointed to the branches.
It's so slight you can scarcely see it, but look! Fresh sap from the trunk and a handful of new buds. It's only a matter of time now. Oh, friend, I thank you again for giving me hope once more.
I had grown to know these streets fairly well after a few days of running errands. Every once in a while, I searched Ragpicker Square for some hint of Farid's whereabouts, spending one day picking garbage from dawn to dusk. There was nothing there as far as I could tell, but perhaps with three pairs of hands. Well, two pairs of hands and one annoying skull, the search would be over much quicker. I was mulling this over as we walked through the hive when an agonized wail caught my attention. Streams of tears had carved channels down the man's dust-covered face. He looked to be a monk or holy man of some sort, but the dirt covering his body made it nearly impossible to see the man beneath. He was chanting and rolling his head back and forth. It looked like some sort of ritual. I approached him.
Are you all right?
The man stopped his frenzied chanting and glared at me with his tear-rimmed eyes. He opened his parched mouth to speak, but all he could manage was a withered croak. I searched my pouch. I knew I had a rag in here that could be used for a handkerchief. "What's wrong? Why are you crying?"
"I..."
His voice was so hoarse that it sounded like he had been without water for days. As I watched, a tear trickled down his face.
"I am a crier of Essanon."
I tugged out a scrap of cloth, but it was rough and oil-stained. No good. I sighed and looked up at the man. "Essanon? Who is that?"
"Who is Essanon?"
The man threw back his head and gave a rasping laugh. It sounded brutal and defeated.
"Essanon is not a man, but a city."
"Why do you cry for a city?" His voice was hoarse.
"We cry its name because Essanon must not be forgotten. All the criers of Essanon carry this burden."
"You mourn a city? Why do you do such a thing?"
"Because its name is all that remains. Its avenues of light, its great spiraling parks. When it was laid waste and reduced to memory, only 70 of its people survived. It was our duty to see that its name was remembered across the plains. Many criers of Essanon have died for the sake of remembering. Many."
The man was mad with grief. "If it places you and others at risk, why don't you stop?" He shook his head, fat tears crawling down his cheeks even as he spoke.
"The tears I shed, the dust that cloaks me, these things are as nothing compared to what awaits should I give up my sacred burden. We must see that its name is remembered. We are living memorials to its passage."
"If that's so, then what happens when you all die?" A fresh tear sprang to the crier's eye. Even his dust-cake face couldn't disguise his look of despair.
"I do not know. We criers of Essanon cannot mourn it forever. Even now the dust clings to our robes, the spit dries in our mouths, and our bodies wither and die."
"Is there any way I could help you?"
"You are kind to ask." The crier shook his head. "Unless you can immortalize Essanon, there is no help to be had."
The image of a black stone obelisk sprang to mind, and I faced the crier with the gleam of an idea in my eyes. "Must it be immortalized by a man? Would a tombstone serve?" The crier blinked.
"Tombstone?"
"It's a stone that records a man's name, his life, and a eulogy. If it serves a man, could it not also serve a city that has died?" He stared at me a moment, awestruck.
"Stones may do such things?"
I nodded. "Yes, and their lifetime is much longer than a man's. If its name was carved on a stone, would Essanon's memory be served?" The man paused.
"Would others see this name?"
I smiled. "Yes, it would be there for all to see, long after you have died." The man nodded.
"If such a thing were possible," he turned to me, "where would one find such a stone?"
"I know of one. I could see to it that Essanon's name is carved upon it."
You would do this?
The man's eyes watered up again.
"You would be setting all of the criers of Essanon free. But 70 of us remain. The burden of remembering would be over after 70 years.
"I would do so. I will return when the name is carved." "I'd like to bury a name," I said to Death of Names. He nodded, then unfolded his small hand from where it is cradled on his side. I winced at the sight of the atrophied limb. "Cost Chink to bury a name, 3 coppers, 3. Essanon. I fished into my pouch for the coin. The coppers fell into Death of Name's hand, and he tucked his arm back to his side. His eyes, now suddenly alive, rolled to the back of his head, then snapped forward to begin scanning the monolith and walls of the memorial area with that same inhuman speed as before. He caught sight of a spot on the wall and quickly scuttled over to it. Hunching down, he began to chip at the wall. He stopped a few moments later and hopped up, then returned to me.
"Buried,"
The word had a finality to it that was unsettling. I ran a hand over the tight little corner of the wall. There, the name white and freshly carved against the stone was Essanon. A humble mark, but one that would hopefully suffice. When I returned to the crier of Essanon, he was still emitting choked sobs as he chanted the dead city's name. Tears were rolling down his cheeks. I have seen to it that Essanon's name has been remembered. It lies carved upon the black stone monument outside of the mortuary. Suddenly, there was a brief whisper in the air, and the man's eyes dried. One of the tears that ran on his cheek simply vanished.
"Then Essanon is served. I will tell my fellow criers of the stone you have described. You have my gratitude."
It was nothing. Farewell. I hope you and your brother spend the rest of your days peacefully. You know, Chief, as much as this gives me a nice tingly feeling in places I've missed for longer than I can remember...
I know. I cut him off, watching the monk plod away, standing straight. It was as if a world had been lifted from his shoulders. It's time to find Farid.
And that's going to do it for our reading today, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to send us some feedback on the show, please do so. You can tweet at me. I'm at @endless_odyssey on Twitter. You can tweet at the show's account, @codex_radio. Please go give the show account a follow if you would. And you can always send emails to codexpodcast@myriadtrues.com. That's all I've got for you this week. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.